Carolyn, one of the things I was fascinated about as I've been listening to your presentations is this concept as house churches started to emerge, and then how houses were situated with the terrace, and there was customs that certain people would sit in certain places, and that was latent in the culture in general. And then we hear, like in somebody, like the book of James, my brothers, as believers in our glorious Lord Jesus, don't show favoritism. Suppose a man comes into your meeting, that's assembly, you know, house church, wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in shabby clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes, here's a good seat for you, would say to the poor man. You stand there, you sit on the floor by my feet. Have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? That's fascinating language here.
And it's about social discrimination, really. It was in the culture to treat someone who was well-dressed and apparently, obviously, upper class, you know, to treat them better than the poor person in the shabby clothes. Right. Maybe it still is part of our culture, you know. And James is very strong about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I read this passage, I heard this, because one of the passages that motivates my heart to bring free, high-quality ministry training to anyone and turn no one away, and not just high-quality ministry. We're talking like people like Dr. Osik here, who've studied this their whole life. I don't want to just make any of this up. I want the best. Because in some ways, we want to welcome everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want, like, oh, you have to pay, you know, $50,000 for this education to get that. No, it's for everyone. I know there's all accreditation. I know there's all kind of complications. But at the end of the day, Christianity is always welcoming and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And
comment about, I think your translation says favoritism. Mm-hmm. Some translations say partiality.
Okay.
The Greek word is prosopolemsia, which is receiving the face, to receive the face, to pay attention to the face, you know. And you're not to do that. You're not to in other words, don't go on first appearances. Or outward appearances or first impressions.
Now, I want to talk about Philemon household, the mm-hmm. house church. There's a Phia in there,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so what would that a house church look like? Do you think, in your opinion, just your educated opinion?
Well, the household of Philemon hosts a house church. That's quite sure. And there are three names at the beginning of the letter. It's Philemon, Apphia, and Archippos.
Okay.
And we don't know how they're related. But within a verse or two, the plural address switches to singular. Paul is now writing to a single person who is masculine. So it's presumably Philemon. But we don't know whether Apphia is his wife, or if Apphia and Archippos are married, or if they're all three siblings. We don't know. But the fact that he writes to all three of them indicates that they somehow together are some kind of a household team, and perhaps a ministry team for what's going on in that household.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And they obviously included slaves, and you know, so that could have been a larger gathering.
Yeah.
Now, I find it fascinating in, like, in Corinthians and the very early Christianity, where these house churches are dealing even with variations, like, you know, even addressing, you know, sexual deviation of the reports that this is somebody's sleeping with that person, mm-hmm. that comes back to me. And was the house church structure strong enough to hold such accountability? You know, I mean, I just think about it. That's fascinating that something like this could get in. You know, he specifically, now again, with HIPAA laws and with shaming, we don't do that. And, you know, in churches, I've been church planting, all these things are extremely confidential and private, but they really meant business back then.
Yeah, Paul is throwing his weight around in that way.
You know,
he's trying to use his authority to say, don't do this, we just don't do it that way. Yeah. whether, see, that's again, we'd love to have their response. We'd love to know what actually happened when they got that letter. We don't know.
One more thing. When someone was ordained as a minister, you know, diaconus minister, was it very typical to have a house church? How typical was a house church? Like, if you became a believer and you sense, you know, like in a sense we think of ministry calling as sort of, you know, kind of ministry training now, would that have been similar then, or do you think that a lot of people had house churches?
I think there were as many house churches as there needed to be to fit, to accommodate the number of people.
Okay.
Yeah, and if one got too crowded, they'd look around and they'd say, okay, we got to meet somewhere else now. Who's going to host this, and who's going to lead it? So it was a question of discernment to meet the needs.
Mm-hmm. One last question. In that culture, a female hosting a house church,
mm-hmm.
Would that have been considered like odd or extraordinary?
That's hard to say. Unusual, I guess. Unusual.
But it was happening.
It was happening. Oh, of course it was happening.
You know, like,
and there are other. It's not only in Christianity. There are other women who own their own houses and are operating a household with hospitality, having their own parties, entertainment, this kind of thing, you know. So it's not unheard of. The model, and when we talk about household codes, which I think is the next lesson coming up, when we talk about the household codes, I will talk about some of the background on treatises on household management. And they all assume a male head of household. And I have worked with Roman social historians to say, give me examples of women who are running households. And there are a few. They aren't talked about because they're not the norm, but they exist. And having a woman running a house church is an adaptation of that. It's her house.
Right.
And she's the one who offers the hospitality, so she's the normal person.
Now, if what you say is true, that it's in general culture, in the Roman culture, rare. And we actually have mentions, Nympha and other gals, Phoebe, that have house churches. You know what that tells me? That women really were on the forefront of putting their lives on the line early on,
mm-hmm.
that, because, you know, it's almost like the statistics thing. You know, you'd expect, it is possible that not one mention of one woman's house church, it is possible that that could have occurred, but because the cultural setup was mainly men who ran households, and
mm-hmm.
but the fact that we actually have documentation of these women who ran households
mm-hmm.
is extraordinary.
Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
it would have been somewhat mm-hmm. extraordinary in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes we like to say to ourselves, well, isn't it great the providence of God included a couple of women to encourage all our sisters who are called to ministry to go forward?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. But there's also the pure truth that it's very exceptional, and if that happened, and these are exceptional women then.
Yeah, that's right.
Just like now, you're an exceptional woman in the calling of God as you are called, and you're an exceptional man as you are open to the gifts of men and women. So it's kind of an interesting mm-hmm. observation that there actually is documentation of women who run house churches.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I'm enjoying this whole class. I'm sure you are too, and I'm looking forward to our next session.